Welcome to the podcast. I'm Angela Beaubier, and this is Life in the Talbot Settlement, brought to you by Tyrconnell Heritage Society, operators of Bacchus Page House Museum. In this series, we will do our best to give you a full appreciation of the history of Western Elgin County in southwestern Ontario, from First Nations to the early settlers to the 1950s. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge funding from Tyrconnell Heritage Society, operators of Bacchus Page House Museum. In this episode, written by Becky Van Harn, you will learn all about the Anglican Church and its importance in the Talbot Settlement. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge funding from the Department of Canadian Heritage and Tyrconnell Heritage Society, operators of Bacchus Page House Museum. Today we discuss the characteristics of the early Anglican Church and clergy reserves and their reception in Upper Canada. We will also talk about how Colonel Thomas Talbot viewed clergy reserves and how he mitigated their effects in his Talbot settlement. Lastly, we examine the Anglican-Irish settlers of the early Talbot settlement, the founding and building of St. Peter's Anglican Church, and the early priests in Tyrconnell. The early Anglican Church in North America was slow to grow. Until 1784, every Anglican minister practicing in North America had to be ordained in England. Reverend John Stuart was the first Anglican clergyman to come to Upper Canada in 1786. Most early Anglican clergymen in Canada were of an evangelical disposition, meaning a tradition within Protestant Christianity emphasizing the authority of the Bible, personal conversion, and salvation by faith in the atonement. In remote areas, church services were often held outdoors, in a parlor, or sometimes in a barn, sometimes outside if they had no buildings. When there were no clergymen around, lay people, meaning a non-ordained member, often read prayers and gave sermons. Because of a lack of Anglican priests, many early colonial wedding ceremonies were officiated by military officers and were technically illegal under British law. Therefore, an act was introduced to make these marriages legal. A justice of the peace now had the power to perform marriages if there were no Anglican priests within 18 miles. These were referred to as spliced marriages. Holy Communion was typically administered on the first Sunday of the month, and baptisms after the reading of the second lesson at morning or afternoon prayer. Marriages were often solemnized in the church, but also frequently took place in the clergyman's house or that of the bride's father. Anglican churches in Upper Canada were created on the land of clergy reserves. Clergy reserves were tracts of land in Upper and Lower Canada reserved for the support of a Protestant clergy by the Constitutional Act of 1791. 1/7 of all surveyed crown lands were set aside for this purpose, and provision was made to dedicate some of those reserved lands as glebe land in support of any parsonage or rectory that may be established by the Church of England. Glebe is an area of land within a parish which is used to support the priest. The land could be owned by the church, or the profits from the land may be reserved for the use of the church. The reserves were allotted in 200-acre lots, except in the Talbot settlement, where they were scattered haphazardly. Many, including John Graves Simcoe and prominent members of the church, interpreted Protestant clergy to mean specifically Anglican clergy, and wished to exclude all other Protestant denominations. Clearly, they were also excluding Roman Catholics. Reverend John Strawn was appointed to the Executive Council of Upper Canada in 1815 and began to push for the Church of England's autonomous control of all the clergy reserves. Dr. Strawn was born a Presbyterian in Scotland, but never fully accepted Presbyterianism and first received communion at an Anglican church upon his immigration to Kingston, Ontario. Strawn was consecrated the first Anglican Bishop of Toronto in 1839. He defended the Church of England from opponents who wanted to reduce its influence in Upper Canada, as he wished for Upper Canada to be under the control of the Church of England to avoid American Methodist influence. He tried to set up annual reviews for grammar school to make sure they were following Anglican doctrine. In 1824, the Church of Scotland was granted a share of the reserves, but the Anglican Church still claimed the majority of clergy reserves. One man who did not like the clergy reserves was Colonel Thomas Talbot. Rather than honoring the clergy and the Crown reserves, Talbot claimed that land for himself and for his settlers. Talbot moved the plots allocated to the government and the church to swampland, which allowed him to guarantee good plots of farmland for his settlers. Some of the first settler families to come to the Talbot settlement in what is now Dutton, Dunwich, are the Patterson family and the Pierce family. They were staunch supporters of the Church of England, with John Pierce's mother even being a sister of the first Protestant bishop in the United States, Bishop Seabury. It is no wonder that these early settlers were anxious to build an Anglican church in Tyrconnell and were excited and inspired by a visit from the first traveling missionaries. Honorable and Reverend Dr. Charles James Stuart, fifth son of the 7th Earl of Galloway, who later became second Bishop of Quebec in 1825, first visited Dunwich in 1820 and was one of the first ministers of any church to hold service in the township. Reverend Charles James Stuart had been educated at home by a private tutor and had attended Corpus Christi College, Oxford. He had considered going to India as a missionary, but eventually decided to come to Canada. England was experiencing a low ebb in missionary zeal at that time, and many questioned the ability of an English nobleman to inspire the residents of Upper Canada. However, his manners were so charming that many overcame their prejudice. Stuart was also a noted abolitionist and refused to use sugar because it was the product of slave labor. The first bishop of Quebec, Bishop George Mountain, writes that Dr. Stuart found himself, quote, buried in the woods, thousands of miles from all his connections, many of whom were of the highest nobility. Here this single-hearted man, not strong in bodily health, was laboring to build up the Church of God among a people who were utter strangers to the Church of England, or, it may be said, to religion of any kind. End quote. Dr. Stuart kept records of all those baptized by him in Colonel Talbot's house in 1820. Among those baptized were Olivia, daughter of Leslie and Lydia Patterson, John, son of John and Francis Pierce, and Thomas and Mary, children of Stephen and Anne Backus. Records of baptisms show that he spent a week in the district in 1822, and that in 1827, the first confirmation service in Elgin County was held in Colonel Patterson's home before St. Peter's Church was built. Among those confirmed were Stephen, Anne, and Andrew Backus, that's right, Andrew Backus from Backus Page House Museum, William, Richard, Leslie, Catherine, and Marianne Pierce, Lydia, Walter, Mary, Hannah, and Joseph Patterson, Anne Morehouse, and Charles Crane. It appears that Dunwich was something of a religious center even before the construction of a church. The rector of the church in St. Thomas, Reverend A. McIntosh, wrote, quote, on Sunday, 28th of October, I performed divine service in Dunwich to continue regularly every sixth Sunday till their church is finished, then the first Sunday of each month, end quote. Leslie Patterson's widowed sister, Mary Patterson Story, gifted 10 acres of her land grant for the construction of St. Peter's Church, along with a burial ground and rectory glebe lands. This plot of land was the best part of the farm Mary Story had purchased from Colonel Talbot for 2 barleycorns. Mary's son Walter had toiled hard to clear and improve this land. The land was likely given in 1825, and that is the year in which the cemetery was first used, and the land was officially deeded to the Diocese of Quebec in 1828. The Patterson, Pierce, Story, and Backus families each pledged £70 to the project, as well as doing much of the labor that went into building St. Peter's Church. The church was built in the autumn of 1827. George Crane and Leslie Patterson worked as the framers. There was no scarcity of timber in those days, and only the best of white or blue oak was used. Initially, a carpenter's workbench was used as the pulpit. The outside of the church was finished in rough cast, and the shingles and lath were made from pine split by hand. We actually have 3 or 4 pieces of the lath in our agricultural center that you can see. A scow and road were built to haul limestone up from Lake Erie for the plaster. Colonel Patterson went by boat to Buffalo, New York to purchase glass for the windows and lead and oil for the paint and putty. To make the paint, the lead had to be ground into oil by hand. This is one of my favorite stories. They used a large iron kettle as the mortar and an old cannonball as the pestle. I can only assume that the cannonball was left over from the War of 1812. The first service held in St. Peter's Anglican Church likely took place towards the end of 1828, though it was still unfinished inside. The second missionary, or rector, was Reverend Edward I. Boswell, whose incumbency lasted only 3 months, but who performed a baptism in Dunwich in 1829. Boswell was followed by Reverend Mark Burnham, who stayed for 2 years and resided at Tyrconnell in part of John Pierce's house until 1831. By this time, St. Peter's Church needed some repairs. The present siding was put on by Stephen Backus, and John Pierce finished the inside by lathing and plastering the walls and ceiling, making seats, a reading desk, and a pulpit. St. Peter's was consecrated in 1840 by Bishop John Strawn of Toronto. While on his visit to Dunwich, Bishop Strawn visited the home of Colonel Thomas Talbot, where he observed that Talbot, quote, superintended the settlement of this section of the province and now beholds 50 or 60,000 inhabitants in the space, which when committed to his charge was one dense forest without a single inhabitant, end quote. The bishop was clearly impressed by Talbot's growing settlement. He was also taken by the inhabitants themselves. He commented that, quote, although there was no resident clergyman, the settlers, who had already given proof of their zeal and devotion by building a small church, were preparing to erect a parsonage, end quote. I do need to mention in one of the quotes I just read that they referenced that there was no single inhabitant anywhere in the forest that Colonel Thomas Talbot was given for settlers. There were Indigenous people living in the Talbot settlement before Colonel Talbot arrived. I do want to recognize that before Colonel Talbot arrived, there were inhabitants here in Upper Canada, in all of North America. We did have First Nations living in the area, and it would be remiss of me not to correct the old quotes that we have provided you. When Mary Story, the woman who had graciously donated her land to the founding of St. Peter's Church, died in 1842, her devotion to the church was expressed in her obituary, which called her, quote, a sincere and devoted member of the Church of England, the knowledge of whose principles she took every pains during a long life to extend. It was chiefly owing to her exertions that a church was built in Dunwich. Besides giving 10 acres of land on which to build it, she contributed much of her means to complete it, and after her death left a liberal sum of money towards building a parsonage, which is soon to be commenced. End quote. The obituary also says that Mary Story, quote, rejoiced that she had lived to see established in this diocese the Church Society, as the means by which to hitherto misguided liberality of churchmen would be directed into the right channel. End quote. Reverend Burnham's successor was a Reverend James Stewart, who became the first official resident minister of the parish. James Stewart had been on Charles James Stewart's traveling missions years before. As the first resident minister, Reverend Stewart opened the first parish register, which contains the names of nearly 500 people, which he baptized between 1842 and 1849. The parish grew rapidly under Reverend Stewart. Records show that Colonel Talbot contributed $40 towards the erection of the parsonage, the only time his name is mentioned as contributing to the support of St. Peter's in any way. In 1844, a bell was given in memory of Bishop Charles James Stewart, and the present belfry and spire were constructed a year later in 1845 by architect Edward Matthews. Stewart's records show that the parish donated money to several worthy causes, including collecting a sum of £2.10 for the widows and orphans of the clergy of the diocese in 1846. And in 1847, a collection of £50, which was sent to Ireland during the Great Famine, that included £12.10 given by Colonel Talbot. As you may remember, Colonel Talbot was from Ireland, as were many of our early settlers. In our collection, we have a rather special book, titled Lectures on the Church Catechism, written for the use of parishioners of Bainton, in the East Riding of the County of York. This book is written by Reverend John Bell, D.D., and printed by George Peacock, Coney Street in 1805. Now, what makes this particular artifact very special is that it was originally owned by Reverend James Stewart and was given as a gift to Robert Backus. Robert was born to Stephen Backus and Anne Story Backus in the year 1827 and died at the age of 71 in 1898. On the inside of the book, it reads, quote, "The late Bishop of Quebec's Upper Canadian Traveling Mission Fund to Robert Backus from the Reverend James Stewart, Dunwich, October 6, 1851. Reverend James Stewart returned to Scotland in 1849, and in his place, Henry Holland became rector. Although Colonel Talbot had promised to give 100 acres of land as a glebe to St. Peter's, he had failed to do so by his death in 1853. Talbot's heir, George Macbeth, gave the south half of Lot 12, Concession 9, as a glebe for the church in 1855, and also promised $200 towards clearing and improving it. In 1858, St. Peter's became part of the Diocese of Huron, having been passed from Quebec to Montreal to Toronto and finally to Huron in the space of only 30 years. You can still visit St. Peter's Anglican Church in Tyrconnell. It's just down the street to the east of Backus Page House Museum. It has a fascinating history and is one of only two churches west of Niagara to conduct divine services continuously since it was built in 1827. We hoped you learned something new from this episode, written by Becky Van Harn, and the many reverends by the surname Stewart did not confuse you. If you have any requests for future episode ideas, feel free to email admin@backuspagehouse.ca and follow us on all social media. Thank you for listening. Please share the podcast with your friends and follow us on all social media platforms at Backus Page House. The Backus Page House Museum and Tyrconnell Heritage Society acknowledges the land we are on today as the traditional territory of First Nations people. As settlers at a settler-focused museum, we value both the significant historical and contemporary contributions of all original peoples and ask how we can be supportive in Indigenous cultural renewal. Life in the Talbot Settlement is a production of Tyrconnell Heritage Society, operators of Backus Page House Museum. Your host has been Angela Beaubier. Music provided by Jack Whitmer. And thanks to our producer, Caitlin Rietsma. To make a charitable donation, become a Tyrconnell Heritage Society member, and to contact the Backus Page House Museum, please visit our website, www.backuspagehouse.ca. Thank you again for listening.